The Goonies 2, Ma Fratelli's bad to the bone, so you better be badder. Welcome to Nostalgia, a chronological exploration of every NES game released in North America. I'm Mike.
I'm Joe.
And I'm Sean.
And can we just imagine for a second a movie poster with that tagline? Would you go see that?
You better be badder.
You better be badder. The Goonies 2. It's bad. You better be badder.
I guess it would be weird to have a second person movie, though. Where it's you?
Yeah, like we're all of a sudden you're in the movie.
You're participating. You know? The only people allowed to see it were the people in the movie.
Yeah.
There's never really been a movie where you're the main character, right?
A first person movie.
I would watch it.
Yeah.
Doom.
I think that's all video games. Video games that are in the first person are you, essentially.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So they might as well be movies. Right?
Yeah, that's true. Well, they are movies, yeah.
There is a whole thing for that. You know, like, there's, like, people who take all of the cutscenes in a video game, upload it to YouTube, and just say, like, you know, Injustice, the movie, you know? And it's, like, the Batman DC right. fighting game.
Yeah.
Just all the cutscenes. And it's like, well, that was actually pretty good.
It's a pretty good movie.
It.
Yeah.
I watched two hours of Injustice cutscenes.
There are 2 hours?
That's a crazy part, too, right? Is that the things are like movies. Like, if you watch Kingdom Hearts,
Kingdom Hearts, that's, like... That's like an alternate life.
Well, I know
there's
that,
so much content in that.
I know that anything Kojima based is going to be like that too. I just thought that it was more just him.
Does it now? I have never played Metal Gear Solid, so please forgive me. I know you're a big fan. Isn't there like an hour and 45 minute cutscene at one point in Metal Gear Solid 4?
In Metal Gear Solid 4, not at the end, but very near the end, it just keeps going. And it keeps going. I thought it was the end, but it keeps going. And then you play for like 15 minutes and then you go into another cutscene.
Yes. No spoilers, but that kind of happens in Kingdom Hearts 3 too, where it's like, oh, this is the point where I'll resume control. And it just keeps showing you things.
Yeah.
So that's our grief with movies that become video games that actually were never movies and are now video games.
Right. But so time for the Essential Games list now, right? Yeah.
This is a weird story, though, because now, to get back on topic, we have Goonies 2. Guys, how was the Goonies 2 movie?
It hasn't come out yet.
It's a trick. It's a trick because he's saying video games are movies. That's why I said that before.
No, it's true. We have not received a Goonies 2, though apparently there's something in the works or something's been in the works since 1987.
Yeah.
But, you know, since there was no actual Goonies 2 movie, it is kind of confusing that the very first game we get for any kind of, like, movie-turned-video game on the NES is this. This is our first, like, licensed property, right?
Yeah, like, official. Because I remember Kung Fu was kind of... An unofficial, like,
a French love story. Yes.
Yeah. No, it was the other thing. But I know what you're saying.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, it was Meals on Wheels, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wheels on Meals.
It could be either or, honestly. So nobody else is like taken aback by this, though. I thought this was kind of weird. Like, oh, it's a licensed video game. Like, it had a movie franchise, and then the very first game that we're receiving for it on North America is actually not even like a real movie. It's
right.
Just, this game is essentially the sequel to the Goonies movie.
Well, see, I'm sure what you'll next say is that it's sort of misleading because it's not really the sequel to the movie. It's a sequel to something else.
Yes.
Right.
But do you want to just say that then?
No, I want you to say it.
Okay. Well, I think like so this way everybody knows. The Goonies, this is made by Konami. Konami also made the Goonies 1 for like the MSX, the Famicom. And it did come to America in the Verse system.
Yeah,
that's like kind of weird that it only came as an arcade game. But this is the sequel to that game instead of the sequel to the movie. Video games at this point in time just couldn't have plots deep enough to be sequels to the movies they were replicating.
Right. I definitely thought that it was a mistake when I saw like we got to play Goonies 2 this week. So I thought we must, but I thought we must have to play Goonies 1 first, and then looked it up.
You didn't think that like Goonies 1 couldn't have been like maybe like an Atari 2600 game, and now Goonies 2 is...
That didn't cross my mind. It should have, but it never crossed my mind. I hadn't thought until I think you mentioned something that I never thought that this was trying to be a sequel to the movie, The Goonies, just because I didn't think video games would do that back then. Or
so
now.
Do they
even do that now?
That there was a Goonies 1 game, and you didn't know that...
No, I thought that there must be a Goonies 1 game, and must have missed it, and that's why I looked, because I was like, we must have skipped it by mistake.
That would be a glaring error on our part.
Yeah, I was like, how did you not notice this?
Yeah, it's like all of a sudden the whole chronological thing's out the window, because we played Ninja Gaiden 3 before 1 and 2. It's like, whoops. So, before we talk about the game at all, since we're talking about the movie... Who's seen the Goonies movie?
We all have, Mike.
Because I told you to.
I mean, I saw it before.
The trick question.
Right. I think everybody's hoping we've all at least seen it at some capacity.
I definitely
before.
Saw it several times as a kid, but it had been a while, so I rewatched it this weekend.
Okay, so Joe, some thoughts on the movie? This isn't a critical review.
No, yeah. I only have very, very broad layman's thoughts on the movie, but it still held up as, like, being a good adventure movie, kind of unlocks your inner child where you want to go on an adventure like that, probably minus all the like actual criminals trying to kill you, but that's part of the fun. It was good.
Well, The Goonies is actually an exploration of the internal struggle of man between the haves and have-nots. But regardless of that, it was fun. Yeah, I liked seeing all the things that would just become things that we made fun of 80s movies for, like the end of the movie. Sorry, spoiler alert. The end of the movie where Chunk just adopts Sloth. Yeah. It's like, you're going to live with me now.
Yeah, that was... I always thought of that too. I laughed. Like, how did I never think of that when I was a kid? Like, he didn't ask his parents or anything. Like,
did any of them consult any of their parents really throughout most of this movie? Like, remember when the mom comes and she goes... Oh, the screen door. Like, she could care less that the screen door has just been obliterated.
But, yeah, it's such a weird movie by today's standards. It's so slapdash and the jokes.
It's also very, like, I didn't remember it being so, like, fast with, like, the... Not, like, the dialogue is fast and witty. It's just, like, fast and, like, kind of just, like, there's no breath between, like, what they're talking about when they're moving on to the next thing. Yeah. It's a little too quick, but otherwise, holds up.
Yeah, and this just continues the E.T. trend of, like, if there's a group of kids, they should always be riding bikes. Like, kids in the 80s got together and, rode their bikes around town.
I rode my bike when I was a kid.
Okay, yeah, like, I did too. I just think, like, that is now something that's like, Stranger Things, for example, right? It's like you had to have those people.
They kind of subverted a little bit and put Josh Brolin on a little kid's tricycle that he stole from a little girl. That was fun.
Yeah, and he never returns that.
He never does. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's gone.
So there's that. That's my beef with Josh Brolin. Never liked him since. ever since he turned purple, too.
Get it?
Yeah. Anyway, I think it's finally time to move off the subject of the movie, unless anybody has like something where they're like, I have to get this out because I don't want to talk about the movie anymore.
No, that's it.
Okay, great. So let's talk about the game then. Guys, first impressions... Joe?
I actually, at first, there's things about this game that can be a little tiresome. There's little things like you go into a room and you've got to check every wall and it's a little tedious. But after a while, I kind of got into a little bit of a rhythm and I was like, this is a fun adventure. It felt like it was being an adventure.
My first impression was first... What happened between the Goonies and the Goonies 2 where now they're friends of the mermaid. Apparently, that's your final objective is to rescue a mermaid who is your friend. So obviously, you have had prior knowledge of this mermaid. But other than that, in the actual like gameplay, I kind of saw some interesting, this is the first time we've had sort of like a point and click adventure. And it's really showing the criticisms that most people have for this era, not this era of point and clicks, but just point and clicks in general of just bot the pixel. But I still thought that the novelty of it was pretty fun, whether or not it's possible to play this game without any kind of strategy guide is up in the air, though.
I think my first impression mostly had to do with just how charming the game is. Let's forget the gameplay for a minute because we're just talking first impressions here. And I really liked how it opens with, like, that Ma Fratelli setting up, like, the stakes of everything and that the other Goonies have been kidnapped. And
come on over if you want to help them.
Right, yeah. You know, yeah, the translation's not the best, but we'll get into that. I just like that stuff because if there's one thing I really liked about the movie on my rewatch was like that before they even get involved with the Fratellis, like the first 30, 35 minutes of that movie is so much fun and there's a lot of comedy and a lot of slapstick stuff going on. And so having that charm translated in any way for the NES game just like excited me. So I was just really into that and, you know, the difference of the action scene versus the adventure scene, which is something we'll get into in a second, but just that point and click stuff and just seeing the Dungeons and Dragons style layout. And I refer to the PC Dungeons and Dragons games at the time that the Goonies 2 was obviously copying. Just seeing that, I was like, all right, I'll give this a try. I'm down for this. I wasn't like put off by it.
Right. And you mentioned the Ma Fratelli and that cutscene where she's talking and her sons are next to her. And the one thing I noticed is that like, if you saw just that cartoon of her, you're like, wow, yeah, that's her. That's what she looks like in the movie.
The others,
and then the
though.
Other two guys are just like, oh, let's just put like generic like clip art.
They
bad
must
guys.
Have. It must be a likeness rights sort of thing.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know how they got Ma Fratelli's actress to sign
to,
off
to get
on
like
that.
A pixelated version of herself.
Yeah.
All right. So with that, we will go into our Tales from the Manual section. Something that is always growing. In the nostalgia library, we're making that more of a thing. I keep saying tales from the manual. So
good. I wasn't picking that up, Mike.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, everybody should break out the manual at this point. And I just want to talk about a few things. First off, this one does an amazing job on the like very first page that you open up with setting up the entire plot of everything you need to know and how to play all on like a single page. So I thought that was cool. Set up like the Welcome to Slime City. They're back. Kooky old Ma Fratelli and her slime ball sons have returned. Like, I just thought that was a nice way to set everything up just in case you were, like, confused about
what game you were playing.
Yeah, or just, like, why this is happening. Because, like, to your point, they don't talk about the mermaid thing. They're just like, and this time they've not only kidnapped your Goonie buddies, but your good friend, Annie the Mermaid.
See, I don't think it is something that happened between the movie and this. I think it's just before. That, like, they were always friends with this mermaid.
Yeah, they just didn't acknowledge it in the movie.
Yeah.
She was in Atlantis at the time.
Right.
Yes. And then what else did I have here that I wanted to talk about?
Oh. I don't like the art style, though. Like, these are not the Goonies.
Yeah. This is like, I'm trying to, this is like that, what is that, Schoolhouse Rock?
that
style.
Yeah, it's like those, that animator.
Yeah, even Mikey, who you play as in the game, like, he doesn't really look very much like, you know, and he's probably the most detailed here, but like the six Goonie pals, it's like, I can't recognize any of them. Yeah, it's like, even it just looks like six like, people waiting at a bus stop. Yeah, I really can't tell. And then also, Annie the Mermaid appears to be, like, shattering the manual, but I guess she's just on a rock.
Like, yes, she's on a rock.
Like, it's like the rock, but I forgot the outline, the outer outline of the rock. Instead, they just have, like, cracks in the rock.
Right. It's like she's cracking the manual.
Now I can't unsee that, though.
Yeah. And then it goes into explain, and I think this is necessary, if you want me to be honest, the action scene versus the adventure scene.
I think that's necessary for a game of this era.
Right. Like, nobody had been exposed to this yet on the NES, so I feel like...
Do we want to talk about what that is, though, first?
Yeah, as I'm saying. Yeah. We should get into that, because I think, like, the way that they break it down is actually pretty solid. So, Sean, you want to tell me the difference between what an action scene is and what an adventure scene is?
Yeah. So, the action scene is the typical side-scroller like that we're all familiar with, where there's platforming and very easy battles, at least in the beginning. Where you just hit them with some kind of projectile or a yo-yo. And then there are these doors scattered around that you go into, and that puts you into that first-person sort of isometric view. Not isometric. First-person view of a room that has doors or not doors on all of the walls. They're all pretty much just square rooms. And you have interaction options. Like, you can choose to use a hammer that you found and knock on the walls and see if there's anything hidden, or just interacting with characters that you may come across. It's very like Ultima, like from back in the day.
Yeah, Ultima is a great example.
Yeah.
And I just kind of want to, let's just break that down even a little further, right? So you're given the options of go, hit, take, and your tools, right?
Yeah.
So with go, you choose which direction you want to go in, which includes leaving the room, something that might not be like apparent to people who don't realize that it's first person. You know, I don't know if necessarily as a kid I would have understood right away that, oh, this is from my eyeballs. You know, like I would have probably still been looking for me in the room.
Well, they also have a little tool in the bottom left corner that has another version of Mikey that sort of puts him in that space in a weird amorphous way, I guess.
Facing the direction that you'll be advancing.
Yeah.
Yep. So they have that. Then there's hit, which to me at first seemed like, okay, so like I guess when I see things in the room, I'll use my hammer, which is something you get immediately.
Yeah.
I'll use my hammer and just hit things. It never occurred to me like, oh, I should be hitting on the walls.
Right. You should just honestly be hitting and using your hammer everywhere in the room.
Spot the pixel.
Yeah, just decide. Well, it's really which wall though, right? Like,
I don't actually know. I think that
I don't think that you can like hit the lower part of one wall and be wrong and then hit the higher part of the same wall.
I remember looking at a video to try and get farther because I couldn't figure it out, and I had already hit a wall that was supposed to open into a door.
Really? I will say that if I tried the dead centers, I was using a guide, but if I tried like the dead centers, it seemed to be working, but I never really tried like the left, right,
bottom, you know,
so maybe it is like, you know, you just have to be perfectly centered on each wall to tap.
And hit usually is... It doesn't really do what you expect it to do most of them. Hit lets you find things. Like, that's what I know. It's like, you hit the wall and, like, a key will appear. Or you hit the wall and, like, something will appear.
Like, it falls out of the wall or something.
And then, hammer lets you, like, uncover something. Like, break the wall down and there's, like, a door or something. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and to Joe's point, I think, like, that's the opposite of what I would expect hit to do. I would think hit is more of a combat thing. Where, like, oh, I see somebody else in the room, like that Eskimo guy, and you're like, okay, is he bad? Like, do I hit him?
Does he have any point?
No, he there's a really bad translation error with him, where he essentially just says, like,
there's nothing here.
Yeah, there's nothing here. But it was actually, you know, in the Japanese version, I don't have the perfect translation with me, but it was more of like a joke of like, how did I get here? You know, like, that's kind of funny in context. Yeah, instead of just saying, there is nothing here.
Because he says, like, doesn't he say, I am Eskimo, there's nothing here?
Yeah, that's exactly what he says. It's very close to I am Error, you know, like, from Legend of Zelda 2.
Yeah.
Which we haven't gotten to yet, so don't feel bad if you don't know
that reference.
Okay. And then you have take, which is obvious, grab whatever you want, and tools, where you get to go through all of your different tools. However, sometimes you need specific tools to do specific things in rooms, and it's not abundantly clear which tool you need, so that just also becomes a game of, like, let me try each tool, see what happens. You know, like, maybe the candle works here.
Right. And to that point, too, there are just a bunch of things like that where you would never know to do this. I think I found this online. There's someone that you hit. You hit them and they say some terribly mistranslated, like, what are you doing or something.
Yeah, and they'll be like, why are you doing this?
But you hit this person five times, and on the fifth time, they give you...
The candle.
A candle.
The candle, that's right, yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and that's the most well-known example of that in this game, of just very frustrating. I'll tell you what's funny is that there's a guy who goes by the name of the Mexican Runner. I'm sure a lot of our nostalgia fans know about this. He is a guy who completed every single NES game that was released under clear definitions of, like, what it means to, like, complete that game. His run for Goonies 2, and he tries not to use guides when necessary, his run for Goonies 2 was 7 hours long.
Wow.
Mostly him just going through trying to figure out, what am I doing? Because he didn't have a guide and didn't know how to figure things out. The chat was trying to help him out a little.
Yeah.
And it just became like this crazy thing where it's like, there's a guy who's really good at NES games. He's beat every single one of them. And it took him 7 hours to figure out Goonies 2.
Like, there are some hints in the game that, like, when you get the transceiver where you can talk to some of your... Because you're trying to rescue the Goonies, When you were trying to talk to them, there's one where you're talking to whatever the blonde girl's name is, but she says, I'm freezing in here. And it's like, oh, I got to go to that, like, cold world, and I'll probably find her in one of those doors. But nothing in the game at all says that you should abuse an old man or whoever that is And just keep hitting them until they you drop it.
Yeah, and especially something. Because you need to do it 5 times. Yeah. Like, you're well past the point where you're like, okay, nothing happens.
That's the problem is that that first clue is actually okay in my book. Like, it's a little vague, but I'll take it. The hit, if it's going to give you anything, it should at least hint towards the fact of like, ow, that almost hurt, you know, and then like change it each time. Right. You know, like I don't understand why you hit somebody to get a candle in the first place, and why they couldn't just figure out like, oh, let's hide this.
The Goonies
in a wall.
Have changed.
The only thing that I could think of that's trying to beckon you to do that is that the person that greets you isn't like really nice to you. They say, "Go away." Okay. So I guess you're supposed to assault them then.
Yeah, that's what you do to anybody who says go away. Just let them know your stance on things.
Right, and then they'll give you a candle.
I will mention that in the last link from the manual that I have is that in the game hint section, which is the final page, it does say, very, very first thing it says, if you get stuck in a dead-end room, try tapping the center of the room with a hammer or hand mark. Possibly use the hand mark and tap the ceiling, the front wall, or the floor. If you try this with the hammer, you may be able to open up a secret passage. Who knows? Now,
who knows?
You know, I like that they also tried to pretend like, you know, yeah, like they like, don't that's know. Just a vague thing. Yeah. Like maybe try it where it's actually like very important to the game. But it also seems kind of weird that this is the first mention you're getting of it is in the hint section of the game. It's never brought up in the game. And it just seems like a huge flaw. So I think what I'm getting at is it's nice that this action scene, this is the adventure scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's nice that the adventure scene exists. It's really poorly executed on.
I think that I don't know how much of this can be blamed on poor communication in the game, because I think that a lot of the more abstract game concepts that we've come across so far in the NES chronological exploration so far have been things that they had to explain in the manual. Like, you had to get to the manual to understand them. Do you know what I'm getting at?
No, I totally agree. I agree with that. I guess what I'm saying is now that we've talked about the go, hit, take tools, like all these different things, slapping a person 5 times, like all those things, in hindsight, this adventure scene is a cool idea of like exploring rooms in the first person and being able to actually like tap on the walls and stuff like that. But it doesn't work at the end of the day.
Right.
At the end of the day, this is the game's flaw. And the action scene, while not being more interesting than the adventure scene, at least that's like that works.
Right.
You know?
And they got that cool song.
Yeah, that song is pretty cool. I do like that song. Is that have anything to do with like the Goonies?
I think
theme
it's a
anything?
Cover.
Okay, because I didn't pick up on it. Like I was like, man, I didn't remember this from the movie, or maybe I was supposed to.
I will say that I hadn't read the manual until like later, until after I had played for a while. And it took me a little while to kind of get the gist of what to do in the rooms. I did pick up on like, okay, so I can hammer the walls. And I did figure that stuff out organically. So maybe that says something about it being designed in like not the most confusing way. It's just those other things we're talking about that I would never have figured out.
But I think that
looking it up.
We kind of understand what you're supposed to do in those sequences because we have prior knowledge of games like that.
We're from the future.
We're from the future. And I also went in with the expectation that this is going to be way too hidden for my taste. So
yeah, just because of the archaic systems that it set up for you. And I guess that's going to bring me to my next question. Was the first person approach the right thing to do here? Not in hindsight, just saying like at the time, is that a neat enough selling point to say like, screw all the fundamental flaws with this. Let's ship this product with this first-person exploration thing because it's a neat new thing for the NES.
I don't think that the actual first-person mechanics are the flaw. I think it's just the level design.
Yeah, I don't think it helps or hurts. I think it's just first-person, whatever, fine. But it's the way that everything's implemented. The
novelty of the game is helped by the fact that there's first-person in it. But yeah, exactly what Joe said. It's just it's not the system itself. It's what they did with the system.
Okay. I agree with that. I wouldn't think of a better way to handle like exploring different rooms and finding safes and stuff like that.
Unless you just turn it into a Legend of Zelda sort of thing.
Right, top down or something like that. But it's funny you bring up the Legend of Zelda because I did want to go to the action scene portion and just kind of talk about how, for me, that's kind of those situations where you're in the dungeon in Legend of Zelda and you get the item. So all of a sudden it becomes like side-scrolling like that. That's kind of what this reminded me of. And there's not really like there's not really a lot going on here, and so I want to talk about like exploration in general and keeping you guys interested. Did you feel like as you move through the different areas that things changed enough?
I think that the biggest draw was more like aesthetic changes. Like you're right. Like there was plenty with gameplay with like you pick up the slingshot at one point, and you got to kind of count your ammo and things like that, and then you get the boomerang and you get like different weapons and stuff that changed it a little bit as you went. But also just the fact that there were a lot of environments. There's the bridge that you go across, and you've got those skull things that steal your items. They steal your boomerang, right?
Yeah, they'll take the boomerang.
And then you have like the ice world, which has like the very overused but like slippery physics of the ground, and like little things like that were interesting. I mean, it never got like crazy different. But I think the idea of you have your map and you're exploring, you got to remember, oh, now I got to, like, kind of, I think Sean said this earlier, like, oh, now I got to go back to that ice world that I saw earlier. And I think it more so rather than it all changing, it's like you learn the layout of everything and then you feel like you're actually exploring this, like, big environment.
Yeah, I think that the palette swaps help, but the individual screens aren't, I don't find them as memorable as they should be for good exploration landmarks in a game like this. And also the game has this whole front and back system where there are two maps where you can go between front and back worlds,
yeah,
I guess.
And it just labels it on your, if you hit the start button, you'll get to the map screen and that just like labels whether you're on the front or back of the map.
Yeah.
I
have no spatial like boundaries for
that.
Well,
wasn't that, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't you switch from the front to the back by going all the way through one of the first person rooms, right?
I guess.
And then you come out on the other side.
That's exactly how you did it, but I guess like, I don't know if this is what Sean was trying to say, but yeah, I'm glad that the whole thing isn't just a giant warehouse. I'm glad that it's changed by areas, but there's not enough going on or difference in the way that each individual screen looks, then I'm able to remember like, oh, that's right, I'm on floor 3 right now of the front, or I'm, you know, or I'm in the back now. You know, I was able to tell like, yeah, I'm in the part where there's ice on the floor, or oh, I'm in the what would I call it, like the caverns, or
it's
like a woods, or
there's like cabins and there's all kinds
of things. So I'm in like that part. I was able to tell that, but it wasn't helpful enough in terms of like I'm constantly referring back to the map and trying to figure out, like, okay, I'm here, and now, you know, if you were lucky enough to get one of those locators, it would blink, like, where somebody was. And even that didn't make it, like, so easy, you know? Like, you would be like, okay, cool, they're up in the top left, I'm in the bottom left, so I just kind of have to figure out a way to get up, and then you'd wind up being on the other side of the map all of a sudden. Right. It's like, how do I get to the top left? Do I have to go through some of these doors and go to the back end and then come back out the front? It was a little too complicated, and I think it says something where, like, in Legend of Zelda, right, you don't, you know, you can get the map as a bonus, but you definitely don't need it to complete each dungeon, whereas here, thank goodness they at least thought to include a map that you don't have to pick up the pieces for. Thank goodness it's just included in the game.
And the difference is just good level design.
Right, I'm just disoriented at all times almost, you know? I really, sometimes even going through the adventure scenes where you're going from room to room, I wouldn't be so certain that I came out the way I got it.
Right? Yeah.
You know? You're right. It's not exactly like, it's not exactly the best example of, oh, I remember, I've learned the whole environment. I remember, like, I know the area now. Like, I think we talked about this with Metroid, where we were like, we've done enough backtracking and going around where it's like, I remember this area, I remember that area. But I did have a little bit of it. I did have a little bit of time.
The top couple floors I remembered.
Yeah. But I would have a time where I would get something that I needed earlier. And I'm trying to remember what. Maybe it was a ladder or something. And I would get excited. I'd be like, oh, now I can go back because I have what I need. And I can go back to this spot that I remembered in my head where it was. But yeah, you're right. After a while, you start to lose it because a lot of it is very samey.
Yeah.
And something I alluded to when I was talking about the movie that I kind of expected here was, where are all like the fun traps or like comedic moments in this game? You know, I think it is cute that you have a yo-yo as like your attack weapon. I think it's kind of weird that you're being shot a lot.
I thought that too, that like it was just strange to see like the, because I thought it was going to be like a goofy, you know, goofy bad guys, but they like put the gun like right up to your head.
They're mafia. Yeah.
But then when you watch the movie, they're not shy around their guns. Yeah, they're going to turn
Chunk's hand into puree.
Right, that's true. Right.
And granted, there is a bulletproof vest in this game, but you have to find that.
I didn't find a bulletproof vest.
I couldn't either.
You don't have to find it. I'm just saying it's in the game.
Right.
There's a lot of interesting things in this game that kids shouldn't necessarily have access to, but then there's things that kids should have access to, like a football helmet or hyper shoes.
Yeah.
Right. Everybody should have hyper shoes.
I guess the weirdest thing for me about this game is that it takes... the movie, which is all about, you know, friendship and teamwork and getting along as a group, and it just takes one of you and does this whole go save everyone, but they're not going to come with you. they're just going to run away.
I love that point. That's such a good point. Why didn't you, after like saving one of them, have the option to like acquire his new abilities and use him? Like you know, if we're going to just jump ahead to a second to Super Mario Brothers 2, you can tackle each of those levels as Mario, Luigi, Toad, or Peach, and they each do something a little bit different.
Exactly.
It'd be cool if you started off with like the Mario character, Mikey, and then like as you went through, it's like this one jumps a little higher, and this one is a little faster.
You can switch between them.
Like who's the kid? The inventor. He can have like the jumping shoes.
Yeah,
like that's perfect. Like, oh, now you have access to the jumping shoes because you saved him. And like either he gives them to you or you can switch to play as him. Yeah,
they have a menu where you get all of these options to change things. You can just have that be another window.
That's true.
Yeah.
So I think that's a missed opportunity. And I don't know why they went with that choice, but...
It seems like after a while of playing this game, remember I said my first impression was it was really charming how much they were able to like incorporate that Goonies feel of exploring like the Fratelli's area and seeing that opening cutscene and stuff like that. But after a while in this game, you start to forget that you're playing the Goonies.
Yeah, it's just an adventure game.
Right, yeah. I mean, and it feels a lot like Zelda. It's riding on that Zelda success for sure of just, you know, another, you know, just looking at like even the way that they design the manual. If you look at the Goonies 2 manual and you look at the Legend of Zelda manual kind of side by side, even the key art like looks kind of similar. So I'm sure that wasn't an accident on Konami's part. And I think, like, real fast, we can talk about the enemies of the game since we haven't really covered that part of it. So as you're exploring the areas of the game, you're going to run into a couple of different types of enemies. But do they really change that much?
They change based on, I guess, what biome you're in.
Right. You have the Eskimos in the icy region.
Yeah, you
have
polar bears in there too.
Which penguins. One were the dragons in? There was like those green lizard
guys. They're like
guys.
These dopey looking dragons. Kind
yeah.
of. Oh yeah. Oh,
what were they? Well, there was also knights. Was it the same one with the knights in armor?
Yeah. Knights. There was knights. There was lancers. There's golems.
Yeah, I don't know why the knights...
Golems, right? Is that...
I can pronounce it either way.
Golem, I think Lord of the Rings. Golem, I think these guys.
Golem, I think of Pokemon.
Well, me too. Yeah. But,
Golem.
Right, yes, perfect.
But you just start off with spiders, snakes, and crows. And that's like, am I playing Castlevania?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that they just went for a... like a maximalist approach in this is like, let's just throw every kind of enemy in here. There's no real reality to it.
Right. Or like connection to the Goonies other than aside the Fratellis that you can, are walking around.
They're the only ones that can't die. They're the only ones that have any kind of character to them. They replace Sloth with another brother, which is just a tiny Fratelli.
Yeah, well, Pipsqueak.
Yeah.
You're talking about Cousin Pipsqueak there. And Ma Fratelli also, for what it's worth, doesn't look anything like Ma Fratelli.
I think she's at least got the hat.
Yeah?
I think?
I don't think so. No, oh. I mean, like, it's like this blue man with like, they like must have given it like a mustache or something. This sprite is ridiculous. And it's like a blue mouth or something around her, but like it looks like a mustache and it looks like she's like a wrestler. It's just crazy.
Well, she may be a wrestler
because the rest of the Fratellis, they get, you know, they have the hats on. They one of them uses Francis uses a bow and arrow.
Which yeah, it's weird. Yeah. Was like, I thought for a second that was just trying to get away from the guns, but no, they have guns.
Guns in the rest for the rest of them.
They have guns in the rest, and you know the spawn rate of enemies in this game was obnoxious too. Because, like, yes, you have plenty of time to prepare for that dust cloud of the enemy spawning, which is weird on its own. But then, like, you just have to kind of sit there and wait, and then the second it spawns, attack it with the yo-yo and move on.
But sometimes it would spawn, like, right on top of a ladder, and it would just jump back and forth between the ladder, and you have no choice but just kind of, like, take damage. Some damage and get out of its way, which was a little poorly designed.
Yeah, so thankfully you have at least an energy bar and not, like, a one-hit KO thing, because that would have really destroyed this game.
And one thing we didn't mention, too, every time you save a Goonie, you get another full energy bar. So by the end, you have, like... You have what, like six times? How many Goonies are there? You have like six times the amount that you had to start with?
Well, you start with two. So yeah, you have eight.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's pretty good. I think that's like a nice bonus for getting the Goonies, right? I couldn't think of anything better other than like, I guess, a specific
bonus.
But
then do you guys think the difficulty ramps enough to the point where you need eight energy bars as opposed to starting out needing two?
I was doing fine with two.
Yeah. I mean, especially because we didn't talk about this. Now I'm just kind of going in no structure here. But... there's really not a consequence to dying, right? You die and you start kind of back right where you started.
I think you exit out the last door you were in.
Yeah. So sometimes it takes you, I think if you're going across the bridge and like probably in other situations too, once I'm like more than halfway across the bridge, if I die, it just puts me on the other side of the bridge. So like, it's like beneficial.
Wait, so you crossed it that way?
Yeah. Okay. like I died and I was like, oh, I guess I'm on the right side, not the side I wanted to be on. So
I'd like to mark that as a positive for this game, if we're being honest. I would hate to start back at the very beginning. Not even like in the sense of all progress lost, but just like, you know, I think it's cool that they decided, you know, he doesn't really need to explore all of that again. Like, let's just drop him off right where he died and hope he doesn't die again.
I'm glad you said that, too, because I was thinking the same thing, where usually in my brain, I'm like, I wouldn't like that. That would suck because there'd be no consequences or stakes. I wouldn't feel like I'm earning it. But then when I'm playing it, I'm like, thank God it's like this. So I feel like it's like I like to think that I would rather there be some stakes, something to build the tension. But then I don't think this game needs that tension. This game is about exploration and adventure. I really liked it.
It's funny because I think 30 years in advance, they came up with the like the too easy approach to saves and dying, where if you die in The Last of Us, you just respawn right before that encounter. And that's pretty much every game now.
Yeah, right. That's
or at least AAA.
You know, that's what I'm thinking of, like Uncharted and The Last of Us stuff, which is where I first Naughty started Dog noticing stuff. It.
Yeah.
But even like now, Super Mario Odyssey figured out like lives don't mean anything. Why don't you just lose like 10 coins? You know, like, no big deal. I feel that's better.
See, I do too. I feel like there's still a place for the other
way. Actual hardness.
Like in a Super Mario game, maybe it's not necessary. But all right, if we're going to go off the rails here, I think that like Super Mario Brothers 3 did it right, where there are eventually consequences, but they're not like start the whole game over.
You start
the beginning
of the
board over. And I think that was like a good balance for that game.
So maybe the equivalent here is you start back in the beginning of the zone.
Yeah, I think that as much as I did like it the way it is, I don't think it would hurt to like have that consequence start back at the beginning of the zone that you're in.
Yeah,
if you die three times or something.
You're kind of leaning towards, had I liked this game more, I wouldn't have minded exploring it more. But because it was already a chore to get to that part, yeah. I really hope that they drop me off right where I was.
I don't know if that's what I don't know if that's how I'm feeling. Like I don't think I was considering it too much of a chore. I just think that
our time is worth more now.
Yeah, it didn't hurt me so much to I wasn't in this for the tension experience of fighting one of the Fratellis, because like the combat's great in this. This was more like, oh, this is fun to explore.
The game is already long enough with how hard it must have been to figure out some of the weirdest shit, like to get items in this game, that they don't need to pad it with right. unnecessary yeah. difficulty.
So I guess it is sort of like a little bit of what you're saying, Mike, where it is like a little too...
Like yeah. a 5,000 piece puzzle won't, like, if you take too long to build it, it won't just spontaneously
right,
blow up.
Right, right.
And you could take a pretty good amount of hits too, for what it's worth. Like yeah. even at the beginning, it's six
generous.
Hits
yeah.
and you're dead, something like that.
Yeah.
Because it depends on the enemy too. The crow I had a major problem with at the beginning of the game because
they gun for you.
Not only do they gun for you, but they feel kind of erratic, and then they just like all of a sudden make like this very fast straight line at you after like kind of psyching you out yeah. beforehand. And I just thought that was unwarranted. I just thought, like, I haven't done anything to this crow, but also, you know, if we're just getting ethics aside, right, between me and the crow, I also just feel like that was... It's pretty shitty programming to just all of a sudden be like, you know, yeah, the snake kind of crawls towards you. The spider does the same exact thing. Scorpion's not too big of a problem. And then all of a sudden it's like, here's the crow.
Here's my headcanon. A crow is known to have a very good memory and communication skills. So I think it's just you probably shot the first crow that you had. These all remember you.
Is it time for my crow story?
You know, it's funny. It's funny that this happened because I was thought of that. I was like, I should tell Mike to mention the crow story. But I was like, maybe it's a post show.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Stick around for the post show. We'll talk about my crow story.
Because that is his crow story.
Yeah, essentially.
Just in the real world.
Yeah. Do we have any additional thoughts on Goonies 2?
Just one last thing about the enemies. First is that I do feel like as we went further, not that the enemies got necessarily more difficult, but some of them took just an absurd and unnecessary amount of hits to kill. I'm
yeah.
just like, all right, I don't need to hit this guy. He's not hitting me. Like, I clearly have bested this enemy.
Especially if you got the boomerang, you can just
15 minutes and hit him.
Hit them from below them.
You have the Molotov cocktail.
Yeah.
The Molotov cocktail.
Yeah, it's like it's just crazy the weapons they give in this game. It's like you have a yo-yo.
I don't even think I ever got the Molotov cocktail.
It's like it's hidden.
Yeah, it's like one of the last things. But seriously, you have the yo-yo, then all of a sudden you get a slingshot. That's playful. Boomerang, I buy it. You know, underwater gun that you just get because you have a diving suit.
Like, yeah, it's with the suit.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, all diving suits have when underwater
I,
yeah, guns.
When I buy a bathing suit, it comes with an underwater gun. Yeah. And so that was it on enemies, but Joe, I think you had a thought on the ending?
Well, so I had a couple of thoughts before the ending.
Okay, no, please, take us through them chronologically.
Sorry, just one other thought now. That there was a water world in general, which shocked me. I did not expect that there was going to be a water world in this game.
Well, they were in water in the movie.
That's true, there was water.
They
swam.
In a tundra,
yeah,
though. So,
that's
I mean,
true.
I guess it doesn't mean anything. That's true. Yeah. All right, yeah.
But I didn't expect it to be like a full-on, like, underwater, like, Mario water level in this. But in the water level, what you guys, I'm wondering if you noticed, several times on the bottom I see
the
a couple
heads.
Of Moai heads.
Oh, yes, they're
Konami
back.
Brings them
so
back, yes.
It, this makes it
Konami.
The connected universe,
yep.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. So it's just a whole...
it's the same universe where Gradius happened. That's a real missed opportunity for a cinematic universe. The Konami cinematic universe.
I think we're playing through it right now.
Right.
It's not cinematic. It's
you have Gradius,
whatever.
Goonies 2... that whole Twin B thing with the radio drama and anime and stuff. And then now, pachinko machines.
There you go. Everything's a pachinko right. machine now.
I'm sure at one
Even
point
Silent
or another...
Hill 2.
I'm sure at one point or another there's been a Metal Gear Solid movie in the works.
I think there was until very recently.
Right,
yeah.
And now that's like the Uncharted thing, right? Where
yeah.
it's like Uncharted has just been in the works for a very long
like
time.
Like Spy Hunter.
I hope they...
Spy Hunter, yes. Great callback. Dwayne The Rock Johnson is Spy Hunter.
I did want to talk about the ending a little bit. Did either of you beat it?
No.
So, but I do. I am familiar with the ending, and I want to just mention something after the fact because I'm not so certain that you're gonna mention it. But it was just something that caught me off as weird. But you go first.
Okay. So I didn't beat it. Full disclosure. I got decently far, but then I watched.
Nobody has any right beating this.
But in the end, and I wish I remembered exactly what it said, but. In the end, you save the mermaid, and like an announcer guy comes out. He's got like a microphone. He like comes out and he says, "And so they went back to, you know, they did whatever."
It's a live report of it's a live report
like at the end of the movie,
and you see the Fratellis like get into the police truck. They carried away,
and he like narrates it, and then. At the end of the game, it says something like, "Congratulations, the Goonies and Konami." So it's just like it's calling out Konami. I think you're reading it wrong.
I think it's just congratulations to you, not to the Goonies and Konami. I think
from the Goonies and Konami. Maybe. I think I'm actually not even saying exactly what it was.
It says, "Hurrah for Konami and the Goonies."
Oh my God.
So it's definitely like directed at Konami.
But that's
first,
the mermaid,
before the Goonies.
That's the mermaid saying that, actually. Right. Your friend Annie the Mermaid. But she also says your name three times in a row. Like it's like the worst sentence ever.
Then she says
ever.
She loves you, right?
Yeah. She goes, first off, she says, "Thank you, Mikey. We beat the Fratellis. You are locked." And in fact, she's still locked up.
I think this is
in
the moment where like you save this mermaid, and then you're like, oh, man. Like,
yeah. Then she says, "Thank you, Mikey," again, as if she never said it the first time, and says, "At last, I can go back to the sea," right? And it's like,
and
well, not yet.
Yeah, and then she like pulls you in with her, and she's like, "You'll come with me, Mikey.
You're living with me now."
She's like, she's the villain all along.
Yeah, and that's when she goes, "I love you, Mikey," and then that ends. And then the reporter goes, clingy. And I don't I don't know if this is like something that I'm finding out or if this is just known. But the reporter also says that, like, peace has been returned to the Goon Docks. Is that, like, the actual
that's
name?
That's the name in the movie. Okay. That's the name of where they
Goon
live.
Docks.
The Goon Docks, yeah.
The Goon
Are you making this
I
up?
I swear.
It's a town called Astoria.
Oh, yeah, they call it the Goon Docks. They definitely call it that in the movie. I swear to you. I'll look it up right now.
There's a sign in the movie that says Astoria.
You're right.
Yeah. Okay. And it says, peace has returned to the town of Goon Docks.
That's so stupid.
And then the best part is it says the end, the reporter saying that, right? Like, you know, all reporters just sign off the end.
The end.
But then what do you think you're greeted with afterwards, right? Maybe just the title screen, right? That's pretty normal, you know?
No.
Like maybe, I know what you're going to say.
Maybe like, you know, it's a nice thank you.
Honey, how are you
like
rewarded?
That. How are you rewarded? Game over. White text, black screen, game over.
It's funny because there's not even a game over screen throughout when you lose. It's only
just
when
game
you,
over
you would
after
think that
the end.
The end would have been enough, right? The end. Game over.
Also, for the record, the Goondocks is a neighborhood of Astoria in the movie The Goonies.
Oh, is that what they were going to remove and put the whatever?
Right. Well, I didn't remember it either, and I just thought that was strange. I was like, is this some weird pun now? Like, we're just retconning where they live? Like, peace has been restored to the Goon Docks. Anyway.
But didn't the manual say they were in Slime City?
Slime
now?
City, yes.
So,
it said,
where
welcome
are they?
To Slime City. That was the first thing it said.
Oh, God.
Slime City 2. That's just weird, right? It is. I don't know.
Like
Konami,
New Junk City.
You know, this is all attributed to like loose translations, too, probably. Like the whole. Thank you, Mikey, three times in a row, as if any English person says that. Like, thank you, Joe, you really helped me. Thank you, Joe, I appreciate it.
I mean, I guess, like, thank you. Maybe that's
that
how you're supposed to read it.
Sense, but it wasn't said like that. It just didn't happen that way.
It just turns out she's just like a robot, an android built by the Fratellis.
Whoa.
I think it's time for a little game we call the Essential Games List. It's our first time doing a movie game, or licensed thing for that matter, even though Sean wants to talk about Kung Fu.
No, I don't want to talk about Kung Fu.
I guess, you know, what I'm getting at is that this has nothing to do with the movie. We don't vote movies into the essential movie list either. We don't do that. But I think just to make things fun here for a second, give me your Goonies 2 Essential Games List vote, and then also give me your score for the Goonies movie, like, out of 5. Give me your letterboxed score. You don't have to, like, justify it, but I'd love to know. So, Joe?
Well, as far as the Essential Games List, I did enjoy it. I'm glad I played this game. I think it was fun. I think it's a play it, to be honest. It did a good job of making me feel like I'm on an adventure. But no, it's not essential. I mean, there's nothing that great about this game. There's definitely some flaws. And it definitely has a lot of things that you would never figure out on your own. Things that are just not like well designed in there. So no, not essential, but give it a try. As far as my, you want my rating best out of five?
Out of five.
Can I do 0.5s?
Yeah, you can do 0.5s.
I'd probably give it a 3.5. Okay. Maybe a 4.
Great.
Yeah. It's a good movie, but you know, that's it.
Everybody knows by now. We right. know where you stand.
I was hoping someone would interrupt me, so I didn't have to finish right. that thought.
What I do want to talk about before we go over to Sean's thing, though, is you mentioned about the hard to find clues in this game and how, like, you know, that's off putting. Do you think that you would consider putting a good game that has hard clues in the essential games list,
like
in the future?
Maybe Clue.
A good game that has,
like a good game that has like impossible, like you need a guidebook to play it.
So the needing a guidebook to play it is tough because I guess it depends. I never say never. I mean, there could be never.
That's all something. I need to know.
But I do want to clarify. It's not that like it's the clues or the way to figure out how to, you know, what the answer is too hard. It's that it's just not really possible. Like it's just that it's not really an actual like game. It's not a puzzle. It's just you just don't know the answer, and you got to just try everything
like
there is to figure it out.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Sean.
I think that the Goonies 2 is one of I love when we get an experimental game because I feel like this game is very experimental. I think it's a really good experience to have on this system. It was one of the most memorable I've had so far, just because of how weird the adventure and action sequences are sort of smushed together and then stapled together. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, the action sequences aren't all that enjoyable. The level design is kind of shit. Again, the point and click stuff is really difficult in certain circumstances just to wrap your head around how anyone would figure that out. I would play it because it is an interesting experience, but no, this isn't an essential game. I think I would also give The Goonies the movie like a 3.5 out of 5. It's a lot of fun. It's also just super weird. But I would put it on the I would put Drive from 2008 onto the essential games list.
There's no way Drive is from 2008.
It meant 2012.
Yeah.
Sounds more like it. Yeah. I remember watching it in college.
Thank you. And thank you for putting Drive on the essential movies, game, music list.
Yeah. Like, it's the essential like aesthetics list.
How Drive hasn't been turned into a musical and win Tony Awards is beyond me. But I'm willing to produce it if you're out there.
So we're going to put Drive on the essential games list.
Yeah,
right?
Drive is
when
on
we
the
get
essential
to
games
it.
List. Yeah,
when we've
get
gotten
to
through
it.
All NES games and then all video games and then moved on to movies.
Yeah. That's my plan, by the way.
Right.
After we finish the video game medium, we'll move
right,
over to
yes.
movies. Anyway, I'm just going to echo a lot of what Sean said, so I'm not going to say too much more. I'll definitely applaud the experimental stuff here. I really like the mix between the action and adventure. It kept things refreshing for a while. The game kind of fell stale for me after an hour. I think that's where I hit my limit of just like, oh, this was fun and neat, but now it's kind of worn off on me, and it's a chore to find the rest of these Goonies.
Yeah.
So I didn't wind up playing it for 7 hours like The Mexican Runner. In fact, it probably would have taken me a lot more time to beat a game like this without a guide. I did start using a guide, and to be honest, that's just not a really fun experience at all for a game of this nature.
I don't think it's a fun experience in most games.
In most NES games. I will say that, to be honest, there are a lot of JRPGs that I use guides for like appropriately to find certain things later on in the game. And that doesn't kill me. I know that hurts certain people's like gameplay experiences of, no, you're just supposed to find that thing. But sometimes it's just really cool to have the badass weapon.
Yeah, that's
you know?
True.
So I actually don't hate using guides in games. But I think when your whole point of using a guide is just to play along with the person who wrote the guide, that's kind of weird. It's like you're no longer experiencing right. the game. You're watching.
You're just like following a set of instructions.
Right, exactly. Which is not something that I'd rather build a table. Right. You know? So I'm not going to vote this into the essential games list. It's cool that it's weird and it's different. And I always appreciate seeing stuff like that. But at the end of the day, it doesn't capitalize on those things that it makes different. It actually winds up becoming some of its weaknesses.
Yeah.
So I ain't going to put it on the essential games list. Now, the movie, I'd hate to agree with everybody, you know, again, but it's a 3.5. This movie is a 3.5. It's very fun. You'll have a great time the whole way through. But I will say that for me, at least, the first hour is better than the second hour. And I think that that's not necessarily how everybody feels about this movie. Maybe they like it more.
I feel like our audience is going to like this movie a lot more than us.
Because yeah, that's
it was
probably
of their time more.
Yeah. I just think that I liked it best when the kids were just hanging out, kicking back, like
Breaking statues
of dicks and stuff yeah. like that.
Kissing.
So, I don't know if it was a statue of a dick. Right. It was a statue yeah. with.
They broke the dick off the statue.
People are getting like weird notions about what this movie is.
Yeah. There's lots of weird. If you haven't seen it, yeah.
Lots of weird sexual assault. You know, all that fun stuff from the 80s.
Yeah. And there wasn't... No, I'm sorry. I was just trying to think. There was a movie with a statue of a dick, and that was Why Him with Bryan Cranston and James Franco.
Which is like a spiritual Goonies sequel.
Which is one of those movies that you don't watch unless you just like... I don't know, like you've ran out of Christmas movies and you're thinking like, this is a Christmas movie because it takes place during Christmas at one point.
Well, you should watch The Ref with Dennis Leary then. I don't know why I'm talking.
We should. Why Him is definitely more of a Christmas movie than Die Hard. At me, okay?
Yeah, like, no, I'm Die Hard is not a Christmas movie.
I hate when people do that. Don't do that.
You want to know, I don't have a strong stance on that. Everyone is all up in arms one way or another.
Well, you have to match the vitriol of your opponent.
Right.
If you have, even if it's just you don't even have much behind it, it's just right, like, that's your opinion.
I got you.
Yeah. I'm willing to learn from the other side. I'm not saying that that's my, you know, like, that's it. That's my stance. But if the other side wants to explain to me why it's a Christmas movie more for than the fact that it takes place during Christmas, then you're losing me.
See, what I need is two more people that think it's a Christmas movie, and then the four of you can try and convince me one way or the other, and then you'll get one more person on your side.
Isn't Iron Man 2 or 3, I don't remember which, a Christmas movie?
Isn't technically any movie that takes place on Earth where Christmas is held a Christmas movie?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yep. And that's going to about wrap it up for this week's Nostalgia. Hope you enjoyed Goonies 2. You'll probably never see the movie, but never say never, like Joe says, because Steven Spielberg, I'm sure he's looking to reinvent himself somehow.
Yeah. I'm really glad that you invented that phrase, Joe.
Yeah, you never say never.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't know how it comes. These things come to me. They just come to me.
It's very uplifting. I like that idea. Never say never. Never say never to Goonies. Going to www.nostalgicast.com.
Goonies never say never.
Thank you for saying that. I was hoping you would say that and not Goonies never say yes, which is the official quote from the movie. No. It's everybody. No, I know.
I thought you were. I was like, are you serious?
Well,
you
really serious? Like, people would probably be taken aback if you didn't do that. So thank you for doing that. But I also love your genuine reaction.
Yeah, I wish they could have seen my face of how much I believed you there. Right. I was like, you really don't believe that.
Goonies never say die. And you should never say no to going to www.nostalgicast.com, where you can find all of our other episodes, my posts about how I feel about all the games. You won't find how these suckers feel about games because they don't feel like talking about games anymore.
I'll get to
it. Yeah, I got a little bit of a backlog of those.
You got about 30 games now.
I'll get to it.
Yep. This is like episode 80 or something like that. So 79. This is episode 79. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
we're coming up to episode 80.
Yeah. So 79th episode.
Every episode's a milestone. Every second is a moment in your life. So just remember that.
Right.
How many seconds have you spent with us? We're grateful.
And if you go on to our Twitter, every second we post how many seconds you've spent with us.
We will start doing that.
Everything that we say, Mike has to do.
Yeah, effectively, as soon as you, Mark, have finished listening to the episode,
Don't call him out like that.
Okay.
It's not nice.
Well, somebody we should call out is Sam Smith. He's not here right now.
No, he's here.
Oh, wow. He's been a guest listener the whole time. Special guest listener, Sam Smith. He's just been chilling with us here. If you don't know what a special guest listener is, it's a special feature for Nestalgia where we bring people in to our little studio and have them just listen. They can't say anything.
Yeah.
And
we've had some real like celebrities as special guest listeners.
Yeah. I'll never forget that time that Keanu Reeves just came in here and he was just really sat great. Indian style. Yeah. He just sat, you know. What is there a more correct word for that?
On pretzel the floor.
Style. Pretzel style. There we go. Yeah, he sat on the floor. He sat on the floor and just listened to us, and he liked it. That was, what episode was that, Sean?
That was 49, I believe.
Episode 49, so that's the episode after Kid Icarus.
I like that you know 48. You
oh, wait, 49, that's, no, Rygar's 50.
Yeah, you're right, Rygar.
No, Rygar was when we had Meghan Trainor here.
Yes, right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right. She was a big Rygar fan, right? Yeah. That's why she did it. In fact, if you're interested in Rygar, maybe you go to www.nostalgiacast.com, and also maybe you go to our Twitter at NostalgiaCast. Maybe it's on there. Yeah, it's at NostalgiaCast. And maybe you contact
me. On the 80th time, you'll remember it.
And then maybe you contact me, www.michael. .co. No, that's
.uk.
At Esposito Film. On Twitter, I've been posting a lot of comic stuff lately, so if you like old 1960s comics, that's what I've been posting. I will talk to you guys soon. Have a great rest of your week. Enjoy us next Friday.
Go Bills. Hello, everybody, and welcome to NostalgiaCast's own Storytime. During Storytime, we like to bring one of our cast members in, and they'll tell a very nice story relating to the game that we just played, or something completely tangential. So, Michael, would you like to tell your story?
Sure. So, as you guys know, in The Goonies 2, there's an enemy called Crow.
Yes.
Crow.
Based on a real animal.
Yeah, they're based on a real animal. I was going to make that joke, but thank you.
Sorry.
No. It's not my story to tell that one.
I got nothing else to say for the rest of this. So.
Well, you guys will react, I guess, to this story. But anyway, I have an experience with crows that I'd like to get off my chest and share with everybody and see if they have any personal crow stories of their own that they can contact us with. On www.nostalgiacast.com.
This isn't plug time.
There's a little contact button, though, and you can send us an email and let us know your thoughts. Anyway, basically, when I was 3, I had a cat named Smokey. He was a big gray cat. He was awesome. But he was very vicious, even with us. We couldn't pet him. He would, like, scratch it. I was just afraid of him at that point. So I wasn't a big fan of Smokey. But anyway, I was 3 years old. He went outside. Bunch of crows come down. Now, crows are just like in the neighborhood, right? Now, Massapequa, where I grew up, like that didn't have a lot of crows.
They were just passing through.
They were just passing through.
Drifters.
Just drifting crows. Maybe it was that time in the fall. Anyway, they come down and Smokey grabs one of what appears to be the baby crow of the group.
Oof. Yeah.
And he grabs it and gets it with the claws. And if I have to, you know, like put it into words, I'm pretty sure he killed that baby crow.
NSFW.
That's a terrible thing to do. Okay. Yeah. But
especially to a crow.
The only thing that would be more terrible is to remember that crows
remember
and
communicate.
So
when you have rehearsed this before?
When you have crows, when you have crows that remember and communicate, you can guarantee that for the next 3 years of my life, and I'm only 3 years old at this point, the next 3 years of my life, there are crows circling my backyard, waiting for the chance for my cat Smokey to come out there. Now, Smokey was an outdoor cat, but we couldn't take any chances, and I actually remember one day I opened up the door. I'm like 5 at this point. I opened up the back door, and Smokey comes out. And the crows come right for him. They've been waiting 2 years for this moment. I've been hearing caws over my house like for years at this point. I just thought everybody has crows in their neighborhood. You know, it's just something that's normal to me. We'd be outside. My mom wouldn't like it at all. You know, we'd be playing outside in the backyard. And she'd just be like, those crows are going to kill my kids. You know, they never did. They never even came close to us. But I just always remember hearing those sounds. And the crows come really down low to Smokey, and they got a piece of his ear.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Jeez. He had, for the rest of his life, he had a little like hole up in the top.
The fact that they recognized
tit for tat.
Like, that's insane.
And then, and 2 years later, they never forgot. So anyway, eventually the crows go away. Smokey winds up living to be 21. Okay? So that's incredible that he saw through all of that. But I remember, like, asking my parents, I was like, you know, there were a lot of crows here when we were kids. What was up with that? So then they reminded me of the whole story and everything like that. And then my dad took it a step further and said that he would have to drive to work every morning at, like, 5 a.m. He would drive to work, and he would drive off to drop off at the train station. The train station's in town, still in Massapequa, so, like, it's not that far. And the crows would apparently follow him in the car from the train and back each time.
So they remembered your dad too.
I feel like he was out there the time that Smokey the time that Smokey did. But they never came down on him. But maybe they thought that, like, we'll keep track of this family. Yeah. But
see if he's making any contact with other cats over there at the
crows. Definitely never say never. They never say die, and they never say I won't have another bite of that ear.
And that's right. Why the enemy animation just goes to guns for you. They think you're smoking.
Right. Well, honestly, it didn't happen in my game. It didn't happen in Sean's game. It just happened in Mike's game.
Yeah, those are the same crows. Thank you for listening to Storytime. Sean, do you have anything you want to plug?
That's Storytime, guys. I would like to invite you to the next Storytime whenever that happens. Go to bed now. Good night.
Game over.
Damn it.
Bye. Stop it.
Are we going to do like a last word
you won.
Contest here? Oh, good.
No, you definitely won.
Good. All right, great.
Great.
Perfect.
Great.
All right.
Okay.